life, this sadhaka has given up materialistic pleasures. He has given up the company of materialistically minded people and given everything to spiritual advancement. And now, having made some progress on this path, because the old habits and the old desires have not totally disappeared, some attraction remains latently for the world. And somehow, because of some negligence in practicing the principles, yoga chalati manasaha, because of the agitation, the weakness of the mind, somehow he becomes a yoga bhrashta. Yoga bhrashta means that he falls away from the path of yoga and comes back into worldly mindedness. So Krishna replies to this very important question, assuring Arjuna that such a person will never be the loser. Parthanaiveh namutra vinashastasya vidyate nahi kalyanakrit kaschid durgatim tata gacchati. He says, one who performs good, one who performs the all auspicious activities of devotional service to the Lord, can never meet a bad destination. Something auspicious will always happen for him. And then he goes on to describe two destinations that such yoga bhrashtas can possibly have. There are two kinds of yogis, yoga bhrashtas, those who fall away from the path of yoga. One are those who have fallen down from the path of yoga after short practice, not advanced very much on the path. And the second are those who have practiced for a long time, advanced on the path, and then somehow or other they have fallen away. So both these categories of yogis, they have different destinations in the next life. As far as the first category of yogis, patabhrashta, yogi bhrashtas, Krishna says, prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati sama shuchinam srimatam dehe yoga bhrashto vijayate. Such a person, after death, is elevated to the heavenly planets, swargaloka, lives very, very long life there amongst the demigods, thousands and thousands of years by the calculation of earth. And after he has exhausted the stock of his punya, then he returns to this earth planet and resumes once again from where he had left off. But he takes his birth in one of two kind of families, Shuchinam or Srimatam Gehe. Shuchinam means those who are of good conduct, very moral, very ethical, very cultured. And Srimatam means very aristocratic, wealthy, well-to-do family. The idea is that when such a person is born in one of these families, it becomes relatively easier for him to pursue the path of spiritual life because the struggle for material existence may not be as severe. If he is born in, let us say, an aristocratic, wealthy family, at least the basic needs are supplied. So that person doesn't have to worry about just his bread and butter. And then as he goes on, he will continue the path of yoga. As far as the second category of yogis, those who have practiced for a long time, for them also Krishna is explaining very nicely here, athava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etaddhi durlabhataram loke janmayat idrisham. He says, athava, if not, that is, if he is not a yogi who has practiced for a short time, then yoginam kule bhavati janmatam. Janmatam, he takes his birth in a kula, in a family of yoginam dhimatam, those who are very advanced. Dhimatam means of intelligence, of inclination. Those whose spiritually inclinations are very, very high, and such people are called yoginam dhimatam. So with a spiritual culture, it is definitely much more advantageous to continue spiritual life. For example, there is a child who is born in an atheistic family, then another child who is born in a very strongly spiritual cultured family. Naturally, we can see that the child who is born in the spiritual family is at an advantage, because right from childhood, he or she is being trained on the devotional path, for that soul to continue practice yoga from the previous. Therefore, etadhi durlabhataram, Krishna says such a birth is very, very rare, not easy to find. Therefore, those who are born in the family of devotees of Lord Krishna must be understood to be very, very fortunate, very rare souls in this world, who must have been yogis, must have been practitioners of various forms of yoga in the previous life. So now, having been born in these two particular kind of families, what happens next? Do they get liberated? Do they get perfection in one lifetime, in that birth? So let us see what Krishna says in the next two or three verses, wherein he is going to describe the subsequent destination of such yogis. So we will all recite text 43 together.
Tatra tam buddhi sanyogam labhate purva dehikam yatate cha tato bhuyah sansiddhau kuru nandana. Tatra tam buddhi sanyogam labhate purva dehikam yatate cha tato bhuyah sansiddhau kuru nandana.
Would anyone like to read, chant?
Tatra tam buddhi sanyogam purva dehikam.
On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Kindly repeat. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O scion of Kuru. Tatra, thereafter. So now Krishna is describing what will happen after he has been born, either in the Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe or in the Yoginam Dhimatam Kule. So either ways, then what happens? Tatra, after that what? Buddhi Sanyogam Labhate Paurvadehikam. Paurvadehikam means of the previous deha, of the previous life. After all, in every life we change our bodies. We do not remember what kind of body we had in the previous life, and we are not aware what kind of body we will get in the next life. But nevertheless, there is some continuity here. Pour, that is revived. Labhate, he acquires that same consciousness. That same divine consciousness that was cultivated in the previous life is once again revived in this life. Yatate cha tato bhuyah sansiddhau kuru nandana. Yatate. So then he tries, he endeavors very hard, and he goes on struggling like this, bhuyaha, again, towards sansiddhau, towards perfection. In other words, spiritual credits that are earned are never destroyed, are never lost. So in the next life, one revives the divine consciousness that one cultivated in the previous life, and again one begins to struggle to attain perfection in that path. The Acharyas explain that this is something like a process of waking up from sleep and resuming one's normal activities once again. The analogy is very nice, very simple analogy, but very apt analogy. Consider, for example, a businessman. He has worked all day in his business. He comes home and he goes to sleep, wakes up in the morning, and immediately his mind goes to all his business activities. He starts once again as if there was no break. He continues from where he left off. He had some unfinished work in the office. As soon as he is fresh and he has taken his breakfast, he leaves for the office, and there he finishes the incomplete work. Perhaps there were some documents to be written, some accounts to be finalized, perhaps there was some contract to be followed up on, some customer to be serviced. So he does everything that he did yesterday. He continues that same activity. The fact that he slept at night does not make a difference. It is just a short break. It is a comma. It is a punctuation. That's all. But as he wakes up in the morning, he is given memory of his previous day's activities. How much for granted we take the hand of God in our life. Such a miracle it is that we fall asleep and we wake up and remember who we are. Such a miracle, but we don't realize it. We take it for granted. We remember everything that was there in the previous day. It is such a miracle even that we wake up at all after going to sleep. It is only the Paramatma, the Lord in the heart, who actually wakes us up. And therefore we are able to wake up and do all our activities. Once we are asleep, if the Paramatma decides, I will not wake up this soul again, finished, gone, everything is gone. So we are thoroughly dependent on God to put us to sleep also. Those who have problems of insomnia, difficulty in sleeping, you know sometimes how difficult it is to go to sleep. And sometimes we have to pray to God, please let me go to sleep. Of course here sometimes it has to be the other way around. While attending class, many devotees sometimes go to sleep. But some people have the opposite problem, that they cannot go to sleep. So even for going to sleep, we need the Lord's grace. The Lord has to act, turn the switch. Various levels of consciousness are operating. Essentially the consciousness, there is Jagrati, there is Swapna, and there is Sushupti. Jagrati means a state of wakefulness, Swapna means a state of dream, and Sushupti means deep sleep. So when we go to sleep, we are first in Jagrati, and then gradually as we drift off into sleep, we don't fall asleep in go to deep sleep immediately. It takes some time. We remain in this dream state for some time, and then we go into deep sleep. And before waking up, again we are back in the dream state, and then we wake up. That is why many times we can remember our dreams. How would we remember our dream unless we woke up in the middle of it or very shortly after it? So the intermediate period, Sushupti, is the time when we, that Sushupti period, you can see that the Lord has now turned the consciousness of the body to such an extent that the subtle body and the gross body both are inactive. Now even if you speak some sounds or switch on a light, the person may not wake up. The person cannot perceive stimuli. So the Paramatma switches off. It's like a knob. State, you turn it to position 1, position 2, position 3. So let us reflect how much dependent we are on the Lord in the heart. You are in the state of Jagrati, then by His grace we are put in Swapna, by His grace again the knob is turned to Sushupti. And if He says, I don't want to turn the knob back, then we won't wake up, then we will be there. So therefore we see that Sushupti is really like a state of death. There is not much difference between the state of death and the state of Sushupti or deep sleep. In fact, it is an interesting comparison. Death is merely a difference between two lives. Sleep or night sleep is simply a difference between 2 days. That's all. That is the only difference. Similarly, there are universal destructions. Brahma is the creator of this universe. Brahma's day is very, very long. And at the end of his day, when Brahma goes to sleep, many of the lower planets in the universe are flooded with water. This is called a partial destruction, a pralaya. And in this situation, all the living entities who live in the lower planets, they have to remain in dormant state, either with Brahma or more, perhaps with Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then when the next day comes, when Brahma has woken up from his sleep, then again these living beings, they are brought out into their particular bodies according to their past karma at Brahma's previous day. And because the water has now receded, so all the lower planets are now able to function again. So these living entities take birth in those lower planets again. So therefore that Brahma's night, when all the living beings in the lower planets are in deep sleep, is also an extension of that death. Similarly, when Brahma's lifetime is over, at that time the whole universe is destroyed. And when the universe is destroyed and all the universes merge back into Mahavishnu, they remain within his transcendental spiritual body till the time of the next universal creation. So the intervening space between two creations is also like a deep sleep. So whether we are sleeping at night, whether there is death, whether there is partial annihilation of the universe at Brahma's night, or whether there is complete destruction of the whole universe at the end of Brahma's life, all these are different stages of the soul's consciousness. It's the same. In all these 4 stages, the soul, his true consciousness is covered. It is as if he is in deep sleep, or even in unconsciousness, in coma, in the hospital. That is also a similar situation. So just see the wonder. Here we are expressing wonder at how, after 7 hours of sleep at night, we remember everything before. And we move ahead with those same tendencies. But the same happens, it is explained here by Lord Krishna, even after death. Actually, the same happens even after the partial destruction of the universe. The same happens even after the entire destruction of the universe. That memory is given to us by the Lord from within. As Lord Krishna explains, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtah mattah smriti jnanam apohanam cha. He says, I am seated in the heart of all living beings, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So when we remember what we should be doing in this life, what our tendencies are and what our unfulfilled desires were from the previous life or the previous creation, that memory is given to us by the Lord in the heart. So we can see that in every aspect of whether sleep or wakefulness, of memory or forgetfulness, we are completely dependent on Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. So as far as the spiritual endeavor is concerned, Lord Krishna explains here that he tries to revive his divine consciousness as in the previous life, and he struggles towards that. It may happen that for some years initially, he may not actively come on the path of spiritual life, but after a few years, he comes across Krishna consciousness as if by chance. For example, many people, including many who have come to this Krishna consciousness movement, to ISKCON, have come at a certain stage in life after spending 10 years, 20 years, some 50 years, some 60, 70 years. At that age, they suddenly meet some devotee and they take to the path of Krishna consciousness very seriously. Before that time, maybe they never had such a strong inclination for devotional service. They were just like other ordinary materialistic people. Perhaps they had some philosophical inclination, but there was no strong expression of bhakti there. But such a transformation takes place after a certain age. It may be 5 years, 10 years, 20, 50, 70. So why is it that it takes so much time? That is of course because the karma of the past life has to be worked out. And depending on the kind of progress that that person has made in the previous life, at a suitable time, in this life one will come across Krishna consciousness. Let us take the example of a person who has opened a bank account. And the bank has given him a checkbook to use. Now without the checkbook, he cannot withdraw any money from the bank. Suppose that he is staying far away. He cannot come every now and then to take money. So suppose he has a lot of money in the bank, but somehow he has lost his checkbook. So what happens? The money is there. He has this money. Nobody is going to take that money from him. It is lying in his account safely in the bank. It is in his name. But he is not able to access that money. Not only has he lost the checkbook, but he has also forgotten that he has an account in that particular bank. Suppose somebody has purchased some share certificates or some postal certificates, national savings certificate, something like that. And especially if somebody has a lot of money, he may be purchasing so many things and not always even keep track of where you have kept all these certificates. So as far as that post office or the bank is concerned, they are holding that certificate in your name. But you don't remember it. And you don't even know, because that certificate you don't find. It is kept somewhere in your house and you don't see it. But suddenly one fine day, you are cleaning up your room or something, office, and suddenly from within the file the certificate comes out and you think, oh, I have this 5000 rupee national savings certificate. So good, I need the money, now I can encash it. Then I go to the post office, I encash. It has already matured. So in the same way, whatever stock of bhakti that we have done in the previous life, bank, it's called Lord Krishna's devotional service bank. Bhakti bank, bank of bhakti. And this is a very wonderful bank because when you deposit, like other banks, they accept the deposit and it stands in your name. But the wonderful part of this bank is that this balance never decreases. Isn't it a wonderful bank? Wouldn't you like to have such a bank here, all the other banks that are there? That however much you withdraw, the balance never reduces, it only increases. This is Bhakti Bank Limited. So how much more sense it makes to invest in Bhakti Bank and keep our deposits there rather than keep everywhere else. And interest rates are going down and so many problems are there. But in Bhakti Bank Limited, the interest rates are also very wonderful. No problem, even in retirement you can rest assured, even next life. Here today people have problem with retirement pensions. Because interest rates go down, they are wondering what will happen after I retire. But with Bhakti Bank there is no such problem, because Bhakti Bank promises what to speak of after retirement, even in next life or 10 lifetimes, 100 lifetimes later, I will still be with you. So therefore that amount is in our credit when we die. Then we are born again somewhere, either Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe, or we are born in Yoginam, Bhimatam, Kule, in a family of yogis, or a family of aristocratic wealthy people, or in some Brahminical family. Now, that bhakti is there in the heart. But temporarily for some years, we may not be exposed to it. We may not be aware of it. We may not even know that I have done bhakti in the previous life. That person may not know of anything called bhakti. He may even be an atheist. He may say, I don't believe in God. But actually the stock is there. At the right time, however, by the Lord's arrangement, he meets a devotee or some devotees, He comes across some book. Lord Krishna intervenes in his life in some particular way. It is as if his checkbook was given back to him. He found his checkbook and he remembered, oh, I have so much in my bhakti bank account. So how does that manifest in him? It manifests because when he comes across devotees, then he feels an attraction. Yes, this is very nice. Let me hear more philosophy. Let me hear what these people are saying. Let me read this Bhagavad Gita. So that attraction is there. It means that there is a deposit in the earlier life. That is why he is able to understand and appreciate what the devotees are saying. Whereas someone who doesn't have that kind of large deposit, he may have a very small deposit. He may not be given. Somebody explains, oh, see, this is what Bhagavad Gita is saying. We are having a course. Why don't you come and listen? Why don't you chant this Hare Krishna mantra? He may not be attracted towards it. But a person who has this balance, he will definitely come. So Lord Krishna is explaining here that in the next life, exactly from where he has left off in the previous life, he will begin here. This also explains why some people are born devotional in the childhood itself. They will exhibit devotional symptoms, and some people till ripe old age, even on their deathbed, they will stubbornly refuse to chant even one name of God. Because the second category of person has not got any investments in Bhakti Bank Limited. He may have got a lot in other banks, but that will be taken away soon. But the child who is showing inclination to bhakti has got obviously a lot of deposits in the previous life. That is why there is a natural attraction, a natural inclination. Actually, according to Vedic scriptures, there are many sanskars that are supposed to be performed, like Chudakarana, Namakarana, and so on. In some of these sanskars, what is commonly practiced is that, especially the Annaprashana, when the first grain is given, in front of the child, they keep various things. They will keep some gold and some money on one place. In another place, they will keep some, say, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and they will keep different things there. And then they will let the child loose and see which way the child goes. And if the child goes towards the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, they will understand, yes, this person has some interest in that. That's why automatically it's going towards that. And some child may go straight to the money and grab the money. And then we know that, yes, what is going to be this person's tendencies. Of course, sometimes it doesn't work out exactly like that. Many times, devotee parents, they are so much in tension about this. They want their child to be a good devotee, and they are hoping that my child, all the other devotees are watching. And I want that this child should go to Bhagavatam, and they are in tension. And sometimes the child may go also. So the point is that even in childhood, one can understand the inclinations. And therefore, this is a good explanation. Without this understanding of how the divine consciousness is carried forward from the previous life to the present life, it is not possible for us to understand how some people exhibit symptoms of devotional attraction in young age and others do not. In the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Maharaj Bharat. Very powerful, very popular, very righteous and virtuous. He left his kingdom. He renounced everything. And he went into the forest to perform austerities because he understood that the goal of human life was to realize God. And as he performed austerities for a long time, he made very rapid advancement. He reached a very high stage of spiritual advancement. But suddenly one day, he saw that a deer, a female deer, a doe, was about to cross the river. She was standing on the banks of the river and she was pregnant, carrying a child. Suddenly there was a loud roar of a lion from somewhere in the jungle behind. That doe became very afraid. And in her fear, she jumped into the water. But as she jumped in, she gave birth to a child, baby deer. And because she was in the water, she went swimming across. Only when she had gone across did she realize that her child was already born and it was on the other side of the river. Not being in a position to swim back, she became extremely grief-stricken, and in separation from her newborn, she fell down and died on the other side of the bank. Now Bharat Maharaj was watching all this, and he saw that this baby deer was all alone. So he was in a real dilemma, what to do. Now here I am as a sadhu, renounced everything, and I am engaged in austerities to worship God. And should I now be looking after this baby deer? He decided anyway that he should do it. He picked up the baby deer and started feeding, looking after it, protecting it. And in this way, one day, 2 days, many days went by. And as you know, when there is Sangha, then there is also attachment. When we associate with something or someone, then we develop attachment towards that thing or that person. So gradually Bharat Maharaj, even without his understanding it, became very attached to that baby deer. And as the time went by, he became so attached that he started neglecting his spiritual practices, and it reached to the extent that he became practically mad in his attachment for this baby deer. Whole day and night he was simply thinking of the deer. If the deer did not return after a short run here and there, Bharat Maharaj would be in great anxiety, thinking, where is he gone? Where is he gone? Where is he gone? Is he dead? Has some lion eaten him? And in this way, his whole consciousness was disrupted. He had been absorbed in divine consciousness for a long time, but now he found that he was, rather than being Krishna conscious, he was deer conscious. All the time he was thinking of the deer. Where is he? Where is the child? Where is the deer? Where is the deer? And then he used to, in separation from the deer, sometimes speak like a madman. A very wonderful description, long description is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So one day, when the deer was missing, King Bharat, now no more the king, he went searching for this deer in the forest, and stumbling he fell down, and he died. And just as he was dying, he saw this baby deer coming right in front of him. And looking at this baby deer, thinking of this baby deer, he died. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tyajat chante kalevaram, tam tam eva iti kaunteya sadatat bhava bhavitaha. Whatever the state of consciousness, whatever we remember at the time of death, that state we will attain in the next birth without fail. So because, although he had had a lot of spiritual advancement, but still towards the last days of his life, he had cultivated, instead of God consciousness, deer consciousness. Therefore, in the next life, he became a deer. But somehow or other, by the Lord's grace, he was blessed with memory of his previous life. So even though he was a deer, he could remember that I was King Bharat in the previous life. And therefore, even as a deer, he became a sadhu deer. He was not like other sadhus, other deer, who were simply running here and there, frivolous activities, eating the grass here and there. No. He remained in the forest, but only in the ashrams of great sages. He wandered around over there, and he sat there and heard whatever pravachans were going on, or whatever bhajans were going on. In this way, he became fully absorbed in spiritual consciousness, determined not to fall into maya. He thought, if I go with my dear community people, my dear samaj, then they are also all relatives, this, that, they will draw me into all kinds of maya. So better I just stay alone. I stay aloof. So he stayed as a dear sannyasi, and in due course of time, death came. He gave up life from that body. And a third life, he was born as a son of a Brahman. And here too, he was given memory of his previous life, or previous two lives. And then he resolved, I made a terrible mistake as King Bharat. Simply because of one baby deer, I've had to take two births more. I had to take even an animal birth in the last life. But now I will no longer make such a mistake. I have learned my lesson. So now I will pretend to be a madman. I will pretend as if I am deaf and dumb, so that everybody will ignore me. Nobody will want to be with me. So I will not have any friends in this world. I will be aloof and I can practice my Krishna consciousness very nicely. So he pretended to be a very dull-headed person, although actually he was very intelligent and knowledgeable. His father was a very humble, simple Brahman, and he was very eager to train his son in Brahminical principles. But however hard he may try, somehow he was just not able to succeed in the task. If he told him to do, say for example, to take bath before eating his meals, he would do the opposite. He would first eat and then he would take bath. So whatever he was told, he would do the opposite. So the father but patiently went on and on and on. Finally the father died. The other brothers, or the other sons of this Brahmana, they did not like their brother. They felt he was of no use. So they used him like a laborer in the fields. They called him Jada Bharat. Jada because he acted as if he was dumb, dull-headed. And he was happy with that. He didn't complain about the ill treatment given to him by his brothers. He was satisfied with whatever simple grains were available from the fields. And still he was strong and stout, fully absorbed in divine consciousness. Of course, that was his last life. There is a very important incident given in the Bhagavatam where he instructed a king called Rahugana. And those teachings are very, very important. Very nice teachings he gave to the king. And that was the first time actually that Jada Bharat actually began to speak. And when he spoke, it was just pure nectar flowing from his mouth. So in this case we see that in all three lives, there was a continuation, a carrying forward of the divine consciousness of the previous life. Obviously, the fact that Maharaj Bharat, in his lifetime as Maharaj Bharat, was able to renounce the world at such a young age, means that he must have had some contact with it in the previous life. Otherwise, how can someone renounce the world at such a young age? And that too, a whole kingdom, wealth, so many other opulences. And at the same time, he carried forward this consciousness to the deer's body and then the son of the Brahmana. So in this way we can understand how the devotional consciousness that is cultivated by a person never gets destroyed. It is always built up more and more and more. And with lifetimes after lifetimes, it goes on increasing, the stock increases. And one becomes more and more advanced with every birth. And one approaches the goal, one struggles hard, prayatnatu. Prayatnat means one gives a lot of effort, some siddhihi kurunandana. One tries to attain perfection on the spiritual path. Srila Prabhupada said, because he went to America in the time when there was a hippie movement going on in America in the 1960s, when many young people from well-to-do, good, educated families, they used to give up their families, give up their jobs, give up their studies, and they would live a life of a strange life of addictions, of free living, free mixing. They would grow long hair, wear dirty clothes, take drugs, and just live here and there and travel. Prabhupada said that many of these people who used to come to his early programs when he went to America first time in 1965, were most who were very renounced, but they were not devotees. So they got their birth as hippies. So even as because of their tapasya, they got birth in a pious, they got birth in a very opulent land, in a wealthy surroundings, in a country like America, which is full of sense gratification, opulence. And therefore they also had that tendency to continue to renounce. So they became hippies. And some amongst them who had some service or some contact with bhakti in the previous life as sadhus in the Himalayas, they actually became his disciples. So many of the devotees who became devotees of ISKCON in the western countries, Prabhupada explained, were probably sadhus in the Himalayas wandering here and there. When you go to Kumbh Mela, you will notice that there are varieties of sadhus, different kinds of sadhus. And all, somebody is of one kind, another of another kind. So many of these people, they have some quality and that is carried forward to the next life. In this way, the whole series of lives goes on. It doesn't stop here. It goes higher and higher and higher and higher. There are some examples also of how it reaches the highest perfection. When Lord Ramachandra was in exile and he was passing through the Dandakaranya forest, there were many sages who were residing in that forest doing tapasya. And they saw Lord Ram and they became very attracted. And they desired, being attracted by his beauty, to serve him as Sita Devi was serving him. And Lord Ram said, it is not possible. In this life, I have accepted Ekapatni Vrata, that I will take only one wife. But next time when I come as Krishna, in the next yuga, then I will accept your devotional service. So these rishis of Dandakaranya, many of them, they became gopis in Vrindavan when that same Lord Ram appeared as Lord Krishna. And they got to associate with him in a far, far more intimate way than was possible for them as rishis in Dandakaranya. And they got the opportunity to continue their bhakti from their previous life as sages in Dandakaranya. They made tremendous advancement and perfected their life and returned home back to Godhead. Another example is that when Lord Ram was in Mithila at the Swayamvar of Sita, and there was a bow of Lord Shiva which was broken by Lord Ram effortlessly, there were many ladies who watched this whole drama, and they also wanted to associate with Lord Ram and serve him in that mood. Again Lord Ram said it is not possible, and these ladies also got birth as gopis in Vrindavan when the same Lord came as Krishna. So therefore we see that this is a continuing process. It's not a question of one life. It is continued forward, it will go on and on, the bank balance will go on building till it reaches the point of perfection. And then more than this, when that particular soul has reached almost 100% perfection, then he will get a chance, or she will get a chance, to participate in some pastimes or leelas when the Lord takes avatar in this world. Just like in the case of these rishis and those ladies. So then he will be trained over there in the Lord's own pastimes, because when the Lord descends from the spiritual world into the material world, he also brings with him many of his eternal associates from there, from the spiritual world. And these associates will train up those sadhakas who have been born in different stations of life in the material world and who have been promoted to this situation. And under their training, these sadhakas will become 100% perfect. And then they will be eligible to return to the kingdom of God, spiritual world, once and for all, attaining the perfection of yoga. So in the next few verses, Lord Krishna is going to explain the continuation of this verse. So we will continue this in the subsequent classes. So we will stop here. Thank you very much. Now we will have darshan and kirtan. And after that we will have question answers and then prasad. Please remember that tomorrow is Pandav It is the Ekadashi when compulsorily all of us should try to abstain even from drinking water. We start the fast tonight after you have finished your meals, and don't drink any water once you have gone to bed. Then whole day tomorrow there should be no water. Whole night tomorrow there should be no water. And then between 6 and 10 a.m. day after tomorrow you can break your fast. For those of you who are completely unable to do this for some reason, like health or any other reason, please try to have only water. If you can't do with only water, then take only fruits or milk, but not more than that. Ekadashi, especially tomorrow's Ekadashi, is a very, very helpful Ekadashi for everyone. It gives us a great deal of spiritual benefit. Tomorrow we will be having programs here all day. Morning, as usual, there will be a class. There will be Nagar Sankirtan going out at 7 o'clock in the morning. Then after 8 o'clock, there will be class here. Then in the afternoon, because it is Sunday, there will be the usual Sunday class, starting at 1:15. Before that, there will be Arati and Kirtan. Then after the prasad, those who have to take prasad will take. And then in the evening, there will be the usual Ekadashi discussion. We have been discussing the stories of the great Alvars. Tomorrow we will be starting discussion on the great King Kulashekhar, with his many wonderful pastimes. So that is the program tomorrow. Tomorrow is Sunday. Please try to come and spend the whole day here if possible, doing devotional service, and become, have a very, very large deposit in Bhakti Bank. Tomorrow's one day will enable you to have a very, very large fixed deposit. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Actually, you cannot withdraw because it cannot be destroyed. What you have gained cannot be destroyed. But you can stop it for some time. You can create some obstacles for some time. You can withdraw in the sense that you can take the benefit of it. You can distribute it to others. For example, suppose somebody has 1 lakh rupees in the bank and he decides, I want to do a lot of charity. So I will give 10,000 here, 10,000 here, 10,000 here, 10,000 here, 5 places. So how much does he have left? 50,000. So he has distributed what he had, but the result is his bank balance went down. But in Bhakti Bank it doesn't happen. When you distribute the bhakti that you have, then instead of the bhakti bank balance reducing, it increases. This is the wonderful part. Have you ever seen that somebody distributes money and his bank balance has gone up? It's the other way around. But here, when you distribute what you have, then the bank balance increases. Actually, in many of our temples, and even here at one time, we used to do this. We had a Harinam bank, where we would invite devotees to write the Hare Krishna mantra on simple pages, as many as they can. And then we would take and collect it, and keep it properly. And it would go to the credit of that particular devotee. And then perhaps the person who has written the maximum number will get some prize. Or perhaps when a new temple is being constructed, then all these tons of Harinam material can be kept at the base along with Anantashesh at the time of the Bhumi Pujan. So this kind of bank is also very useful. Writing the name is also very beneficial because all the consciousness goes into writing. When you are thinking or when you are speaking, your mind may wander, but when you are writing, you have to be focused on what you are writing. So this is another kind of bank. So those of you who wish to start writing the name of the Lord, it's also yes.
Thanks.
Hare Krishna.
So you mentioned in the class that if somebody has taken birth and he has some pious activity or devotional service in his previous life, and after some time in his life and all the karmic activities of whatever his karma is completely destroyed, then the bhakti starts or he meets the bhakti.
Not that karma is destroyed, But the situations have to be right for that bhakti of previous life to manifest. Whatever obstacles there are that are blocking that person from coming to bhakti now, when that has to be worked out, then he can come to bhakti.
If we take like this, that Rupa Goswami says that bhakti is jnana karma jnana avritam. Hmm. So does the karma also has the link of the previous bhakti?
That is the definition of Shuddha Bhakti. Jnana karma jnana avritam means that Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti, is one which is not mixed with any fruitive mentality. That is, there is no selfish material desire. Neither there is a desire to get yogic siddhis, neither a desire to even become liberated and merge into the impersonal Brahman. No such desire should be there if it is to be uttama bhakti, pure bhakti. But what we are speaking about is of coming forcefully again in a serious way back in the path of yoga, continuing from previous life in an active way in this life. So that point, that spark, that turning point may come at any time. We don't know, because some karma has to be worked out. It is not that the bhakti is dependent on the karma, but it is that the bhakti is going to manifest at a certain time. Certain situations have to be worked out. That bhakti remains as it is. It is not being affected by the karma. At the most, it may be only a little delayed.
Hare Krishna, Guruji.
Hare Krishna.
Guruji, in the story of King Bharat, he explained that about the deer incident. So, we see in the fifth chapter, there are three doers. So, in that material nature, was it the arrangement of the material nature that indirectly it means it was his desire that he comes across these circumstances and falls down to this?
Actually, this is a temptation that Maya puts in every sadhaka's life. The prisoner in the jail is always looking for ways to escape, and the superintendent is always looking for ways to prevent them from escaping. So also the sadhaka is trying to come out of this material world from the cycle of birth and death. And Maya is trying to ensure, she is doing her duty only, that only those who are 100% qualified can only go. So she tests. So Bharat Maharaj failed that test, although he was so advanced. It was a simple test, but not so simple in one point of view. But he failed it. So also every one of us in the path of advancement in spiritual life, we have small tests, sometimes we have big tests. Sometimes we fail, sometimes we pass. So in this way we have to see that at every moment, like a student progressing on the path who has examinations and tests every now and then, which he has to pass and then goes on to the higher class. In the same way, in our bhakti, there will be so many tests that will come. We have to see them as and take them very seriously, and this way we will progress step by step.
Lord explains the destination of the two yogis.
Yes.
In the first case and the second case. And he says that prayatnata means he will endeavor. Now, whether it depends, like one who has already advanced in yoga, his endeavor is he puts on more effort. So it doesn't mean that, does it mean that the one who has not endeavored in his previous life, he has not advanced, he cannot put that effort, even if he desires, he cannot advance in that level as the first person?
Both put in effort, but to attain success, the one who has fallen down after short practice, he has to put in more effort to attain to that level. Whereas, for the person who has already advanced more in the previous life, for him it is more natural. It is more spontaneous for him to advance, although he also puts in effort. Both put in effort. But because it is more spontaneous for him, so the kind of struggle that is involved is lesser than it would be for the person who has advanced less from the previous life, because he has to struggle with his other impurities. and other desires that are there within. So both are struggling. But the neophyte will have to struggle more. He will have to put in more effort to attain success because he is still lower down.
Guruji just mentioned the example of the deer in class. He said that was a test put before King Bharata.
That caused his fall down. The fact that he got attached to the deer after saving the deer, that caused his fall down. So we are not prohibited from saving somebody from dying. But certainly if you get attached and forget your spiritual practices because of attachment to that animal or that human or something, Shulpat. So it was not the fact that he saved that was the problem. The problem was that after saving, what happened? That was the problem.